Joining Kyle Radke and I now, it is a regular to this show and one of our favorites. He is a writer and a communications expert. Please welcome back Evan Thompson.
Thank you very much. Great to join you again.
Lovely to see you. What number visit is this?
This is number 21.
Time flies.
That's a rapid response because 20 was just a month ago, and there's something about being 21.
Right. Yeah.
It's just a really special number.
You are also, I think, the only guest that has kept track. And so I remember one day you came in and you said, do you know this is my 17th time on the show or something like that, whatever number it was. And I was like, how do you even know that? Good for you.
Well, it's not as if no one wants to hear what I have to say.
Yeah.
But I do admit, after each session, I take the visitor pass and I take it home and I stick it on the ceiling in my closet.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. And it's just with a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right. There's a little remembrances.
It's a memento.
I love it. Right.
And boy, does time fly. I think we go back, 3 years?
Isn't that
maybe
crazy?
More? The first was, I won't get into the history because we could go on, but it was about how not to embarrass yourself at the boss's barbecue.
Yeah.
The summer party.
That's right.
How not to fall face flat, et cetera, et cetera. Wow.
And this is the wonderful thing is that, I mean, obviously in your work, you've dealt with so many different businesses and corporate etiquette, or I shouldn't say etiquette, but, you know, communications and how to deal with people and all that kind of stuff. But when you come on the show, a lot of what we talk about, not only can we find applications in the business world, but also in everybody's personal lives. And it's that lovely thing where, so no matter who's listening and no matter what they do or whether they stay at home or whether they work or what kind of job they do, you have advice that they can apply to their own lives.
Well, thank you. Until artificial intelligence takes over completely, people will always be working, or they'll be neighborly in their homesteads with their friends. People will always need to communicate.
No, that's so true.
I'm banking on it.
Yeah. Even, well, okay, let's not get in. I was going to go down a real AI track, but you know what? That's not what we're here for today, right? That's not, we're talking about people. And I, you know, I said to Kyle earlier, and here's something that Kyle does do. He is real judgy.
I can be. I think that's the nature of 20 years in stand-up comedy.
Oh,
to
well,
make a judgment, to make an observation and go, here's the entire backstory about this thing or person or situation, and I'm going to invent it all right now and stick to it because that's the funny way I want to do it. So that's my defense, you're right. It has become a go-to. It's become a habit now instead of a tool.
But we do tend to immediate. You know, there is the expression, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. We do tend to judge people and situations immediately before we get information.
I try not to. I am honestly working very hard. When I have it, it's an alarm bell that goes off when I judge, and I do, nope, don't do it, don't judge. Assume nothing. Just walk away when I feel that need, urge.
You know, it's not our fault.
We have no control
over our primitive brains.
I'm off the hook.
We can't control our primitive brains because when we see someone for the first time, when I walked in here, I'd never met you. I'd never seen you. Likewise.
Right. And you're like devastatingly handsome, probably
a
millionaire.
Yeah, I could expand on that. Good. Yeah. But the primitive brain kicks in, and the primitive brain sends either one, two, three, or four, hopefully one at a time, passwords to the neocortex. A, I'm a friend. B, I'm a potential partner. Okay. C, I'm an enemy. Or D, undecided. And most of the time, the enemy piece will kick in pretty darn fast.
Okay. Mm.
If you don't know the person, because we are programmed to protect ourselves. And that's bio 101 for today, psych 101 for today. But it is a natural impulse that is developed from the time we're born, and it's 2,000 years old.
Right.
And it can really, really hammer us when we meet people and we assign what are called attributions.
Right.
Attributions are either situational or personality attributions.
Okay.
It can sink a relationship before it even begins.
So what would be an example of each one? What would be?
Let's say we're out walking our dog one morning and the new neighbor has moved in. And the neighbor also has a dog. Okay. And we wave and want to introduce our dog. And the neighbor basically tells us to take a hike. We're looking at a situational situational role where we don't know that person. He's just in a bad situation. And okay. we're judging him because we think he's rude. We don't know what situation he's been in. He may have just been told that he has to put his dog down that afternoon, and that's the last walk he'll have with the dog.
Oh, I just got really sad.
I know.
Yeah, well, you don't.
Because I had judged this jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to talk. So he must be a jerk. His motivation is negative, but we don't know what's going on in his life or his dog's life.
Right. Okay.
That's and I think that's something that we often take people, even when we know people, we take their behavior personally and then often find out, oh, no, there was something happening. It wasn't about me. But unfortunately, they reacted in a way that I'm not used to from them. And therefore, I assumed it was about me, which I think is also. I don't know if that's a primitive brain thing or just a we're egocentric as people.
Well, it's us trying to figure out what motivates us to say what we say, do what we do, why others do what they do, say what they say. It's a constant roulette wheel.
Okay.
And sooner or later, we have to really try to come to a place where we will ask questions and we'll take time to engage people before judging them. This is sort of my simple message that it's taken me a long time to figure out.
Right. Mm.
Don't try not to jump to conclusions.
But, I mean, we were talking earlier about tattoos, for example, and how Allison's got a lot of tattoos. She's going to get more and kind of drew the line at the face tattoo because that says a lot about somebody. So when you see somebody with a face tattoo, it's very difficult to not make a snap judgment about that person either being, I don't know what you would do, a sword swallower at a carnival maybe, or a murderer.
Unless you're a tattoo aficionado and you're covered with them as well, then
you'd see it differently.
Al is part of your tribe.
Right.
And you don't even have to open your mouth.
But it's this weird, this is what I was saying. So I get all kinds of tattoos. I understand that, except for the face. And I was saying to Kyle, like, I keep sort of digging in with me because they're in my neighborhood. There's actually a few guys that have face tattoos. And I always go, don't, why? That is the hardest tattoo, I think, for anyone. And again, I'm someone with lots of tattoos. I should be like, yeah, whatever, do what you want. But part of my brain goes, no, not your face though. And so it's this weird thing of, and, you know, one of these guys I run into at the dog park all the time, lovely human being, lovely dog, full face and head covered in tattoos. But every time I'm like, but why'd he do that to his face?
And his dog.
No, oh, the dog is in the tattoo.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Right.
Lovely dog, though, too. Really. Anyway, but it's one of those things where why do I care? And I get annoyed when people say to me, and I was telling Kyle, one of my senior lady best friends in my neighborhood, she hates my tattoos and doesn't want me to get any more. And when she said that, I was irritated because I'm like, you don't know me. You don't tell me what to do. But then yet I will look at people who have face tattoos and go, what are you doing with your life? What's wrong with me, Evan?
Where do I start? Just kidding. Self-expression has divided people, continents, the globe, since we first walked the face of the earth. In the world of social media, more and more as being tested. Face tattoos 25 years ago were probably limited to New Guinea, Borneo.
That's a good point.
Where the indigenous people there
cultural.
Covered themselves.
Yeah.
It was a badge of honor.
Right.
Just like wearing, you know, a really nice pair of shoes or a nice tie. It was just what you did. So as social media kicks in, everything else widens and the seams start to burst. And I think they have burst in terms of personal expression. When the fun starts, it gets really difficult. For example, the workplace, tattoos in the workplace.
Right.
I'm sure some of the most incredibly brilliant investment bankers on the planet have tattoos.
Right.
But probably from the neck down. You might be able to see a little glimpse of one. I don't see any over there.
Yeah. If I was wearing long sleeves, like, no one would know that I had any tattoos. That just happens to be the way it is. But that's, we were also talking about, like, hands, neck, and face tend to be what they call job stoppers. Which means, like, you're really lowering your chances at this point in a lot of industries.
Which I think is really, really sad, because there's the so many entrepreneurs who do sport tattoos, who do extremely well, and end up hiring those who wouldn't give them the time of day when they first came calling as graduates, you know, 5 years ago.
So, I mean, we're talking about snap judgments here and not judging, but isn't that sort of a shader, like just one shade lighter than discrimination? Is that the same family? What's the difference between a face tattoo? If you wouldn't hire them for a face tattoo, there's nothing saying you wouldn't hire somebody because of the color of their skin without a tattoo, or because they wear their hair a certain way, or because of the way they dress, or, you know what I mean? Now you're getting into religious outfits, perhaps, you know what I mean? All that stuff. So when we're talking about judgment, I hear that that's akin to discrimination. It's a slippery slope to there. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that was a short talk.
Again,
Kyle nailed it. All right,
I just got here.
Yeah.
Do I have to go? No. Okay. Thanks. It really depends on the situation. Again, not to dwell on the workplace. Let's talk about the classroom.
Sure.
Community college. Conformity is a big piece of that issue, and now at the colleges, we see every form of self-expression.
Okay.
We see different gender definition, different costume, different beliefs. Pretty well anything goes as long as it's met with respect by all groups. The trouble starts when there isn't the respect.
Right.
And the respect can only come from dialogue and listening and seeing the other person's point of view.
Mm.
And that takes a lot of work if you're not just like the other person.
Right. One thing I will say about face tattoos is that, because I recognize that there's part of me that goes, I don't like that, but I also don't like that there's that part of me, right? Because again, it's like, be free in the world, do whatever you want. It doesn't affect me. And so one thing I do make sure is that when I come in contact with people who have them, I am careful to make sure I am being respectful, that I am interacting with them the way I would with anyone else, that I'm not treating them in a like disdainfully in order to indicate I don't like face tattoos, right? Because I recognize it's my issue. Like somewhere along the way, that has become because I don't know why I don't like it. It's like I know that it's about me somehow. This is about me because it shouldn't matter to me what other people do with their faces, right? Like, so I think that's an important thing too, is that when you, if you do make a judgment about someone, like they look like this or they wore this, they were, I don't like that, but I will treat them with kindness and respect anyway. That's the important piece people need to have.
And that can take a lot of courage because when we do a snap judgment that is based on no information. I don't mean data, I mean real information, knowing the person. We're often exhibiting a lot of low self-esteem, lack of confidence, because they're not like us, and we want everyone to be like us. And we need to be around people who are like us to make us feel better about ourselves.
Right.
Right.
Or people slightly dumber than us to make us feel really good about ourselves.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
A lot of people do that, right? Yeah. A lot of people you'll notice. And this is what I find interesting, too, to take things full circle. You know, we were speaking with Jose earlier on in the show about when you make positive changes in your life, often there are people around you that will push back against it. And what you'll find a lot of the times is those are the people who were comforted by the mistakes you made because it made them feel better about themselves. And so the people you tend to lose, the people who tend to not be supportive of these positive changes you're making, it's either because they also do some of the behaviors that you're trying to change and they're not ready to change, or it's because they were used to you being the friend who never had it together.
Right.
And they felt good about being the one that was like, oh, look at my messy friend. And now you're not the messy friend anymore.
Well, that's really interesting. Yeah, like how do you flip that script then? When people look at somebody happy and go, oh, that jerk's happy. What's he so happy about, idiot? You know, is that a snap judgment as well?
It really depends on the degree of unhappiness of the person who's making the judgment.
Right.
If they are insecure, then they will be probably harsher and more likely to pin behavior on the personality of the person versus the situation they're in, as I was mentioning earlier.
Right.
And as you come to know people more, you judge them more on the situation they're in because you know that their personality is either rotten or good or in between.
Okay.
So it's with that knowledge that comes from communication.
Okay.
It's so essential. I made a snap judgment recently that really cliche, but it changed my life.
Before you get into it, let's take a break. We're going to leave people on a bit of a cliffhanger. You want to know what happened that changed Evan Thompson's life? Well, stay tuned, because that story is coming up next.
And if you don't stay tuned, you're an idiot jerk, right?
Kyle, that's judging.
I'm sorry. I'm trying
so
hard.
Also, don't forget, you can go to evanthompsonandassociates.com to find out more. But just stay tuned, and you can hear more from the man himself. We will be right back on The Breakdown, Channel 167, Canada Talks. All right, continuation. We are joined by Evan Thompson, who, of course, is a communications expert, and we're talking about snap judgments. And, Evan, you said before the break you recently made one that changed your life.
I was in Chicago on a family holiday. I was out for a walk very early in the morning. I came to a corner. A person in a hoodie, roughly 6 feet tall, my build, a big person, jumped out and scared the daylights out of me. I didn't see a knife. I didn't see a gun. I didn't see anyone else around. But my first temptation was to just take off. He stepped back and he reassured me when he said, I really need to talk to you. I'm a diabetic and I need some food. Can you help me? Well, don't you know, I'm type 2 diabetic. The bond was struck. So we went across the road to Popeyes and he loaded up. You'd think he hadn't eaten in 2 years. As the breakfast went on, some of his friends came in. They'd been looking for him. I suspect he might have owed them something or taken something that wasn't his. And he diffused the situation by saying, this is my friend. He's showing me some love. He's keeping me alive. Don't you mess with him. And that wasn't the language used.
Right. Mm.
They all dispersed, and I never saw him again, but I think of him often. Because in that surprise encounter that started so badly, incredibly badly,
yeah,
me thinking I was really going to be taken out or robbed, I learned more about what it is to be a person living in the worst part of Chicago, one of North America's violent cities, the West Side, Garfield Park in the 4400s, which is a death sentence, basically.
Wow.
And I didn't talk to my family about it until much later because I had to digest. Now, if I had done the snap judgment and just told them to, I don't care, I'm gone, I never would have had that experience. But it taught me never to judge people by their situation, by their appearance. I gave him a chance. 3 seconds, all he had to say was, I'm hungry, I need your help, I'm diabetic.
Mm.
And good on him for clearly and articulately delivering that message instead of, you know, telling you a big long story, which might have, you know, a little tip of the cap to him. Like, he gave you the elevator pitch.
He
and
did.
It worked.
Mm-hmm. It was very,
yeah.
very short. And yeah. he did explain his situation. He showed me his hospital bracelet and his social insurance card, both with his photo and his name, Jermaine Jackson.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Which was another plus.
Was it
sure.
the?
Jermaine.
No.
Okay.
Interesting.
No, he
okay.
said his daddy had named him after
I see. All right.
Jermaine Jackson of the Jackson 5.
Right.
Can I just tell you, Jermaine Jackson named his son Your Majesty, and it's my favorite thing that ever happened.
Yeah, that's a good name.
Yeah, yeah. Just a complete sidetrack, but come on, Your Majesty.
Your
yeah,
Majesty
yeah.
Is
I will.
Fantastic.
I will. Thank you. You know, this is interesting because I very recently had an experience where I was leaving somewhere. I'd been at an event, and there were some women there who, you know what, probably don't live right in the city. Seemed quite wealthy. And so as I was leaving and they were kind of standing by the door having a huddle. And so I just said, have a good evening while I walked by and went to leave. And one of them said, you know, just so you know, there's some sketchy looking guys out there. And I looked out and there was two gentlemen. One was sitting on a bench. The other one was talking to him. And you know, there were some trees and it was a, but the sidewalk was right there. And this was on Queen Street, which is a very busy street. And I'm tired. And also, I don't care. What's going to happen? So I just said, well, actually, I threw comedians under the bus. I go, yeah, I got to be honest with you. I've spent a lot of time around comedians. I'm good with sketchy guys.
Yeah.
And,
They're really yeah. harmless, quite honestly.
And but so I went outside and I just walked by these guys. And as I was walking by, I realized, you know what? One gentleman seemed like maybe he might have been homeless, but he was sitting on the bench. He had a blanket with him. He was having something to eat. And the other gentleman was clearly, a construction worker of some type. And they were just chatting. And then one of them said, you know, good night, man. And left and was crossing the street at the same time as I was. And so it was at one of the crosswalks where you press the button, but the lights flashes and cars don't always stop. So you got to put your arm out. And he was like, oh, are you crossing too? Okay, I got this. And he put his arm out and we walked across the street together. And I just thought, really, when you look at it, there wasn't anything that sketchy about these guys, except for the fact that it seemed like they were broke. And it kind of made me sad because I was like, all right, ladies, you can wait in there for as long as you want, but I got to go and these guys aren't doing anything, you know? And the gentleman that was on the bench was quite a decently old guy. And the other guy was just a nice young guy chatting with him.
The ladies were looking at it from a situational perspective.
Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I understand as a woman in the world, we have some fear sensors out of necessity, and there have been times when I have taken a different route or not felt safe. But in this case, as someone who lives in the city, as someone who is also broke and has taken public transit and is, you know, walking downtown all the time and stuff like that, I was like, no, these guys aren't setting off any alarm bells. And so I think what made me a little bit sad was it was the fact that, I live in a neighborhood where I see people sleeping on the sidewalk sometimes and where there's a lot, you know, poverty is still very close. And I think there's something about when you move out to the suburbs and to the more affluent suburbs, you do lose touch with how poor some people are. And so it was one of those things where I think it wasn't so much that there was, these men were sketchy, it's just they looked broke, you know, and it made me feel sad for the ladies and for these dudes, to be honest with you, because we do judge people for being downtrodden a lot of the time, which is sad.
And this is fueled by social media, by the entertainment industry, the stereotypes that we see from the time we're very young. I think, fortunately, a lot of the stereotyping is perhaps starting to melt with very, very young children.
Yeah.
It's still very much alive in America. I saw it.
Don't you find the air feels different in the States? Like when I feel like sometimes, especially in big cities, when I'm in the States, it's like it feels tense.
Really? Oh, you don't mean the literal air.
Oh, no.
Like what?
In it, not that you go in and you're like, oh, the air feels like knives.
Foggy?
But no. Yeah. But I mean, I almost do mean the literal air, but I mean there, you feel like it feels tense a lot of the times in places. And I don't really know how to describe it other than like, oh, I just feel like everyone's blood pressure is real high. And I think that's part of it is politics. Part of it is the fact that there is a real classist divide, I think. I think there's a lot of things that go into it. But I just feel like, look, we have our own issues with racism and class issues and stuff here too. But I do feel like we're still in a place where it's not quite as stressful, maybe. Like we're still in talks.
Well, the Magnificent Mile in Chicago, not to boost another city, but that's one of the most walked retail spaces in the world. And there is tension because you have homeless people begging and you have affluent people passing them by.
Right.
And there's this feeling, look at me, I'm on the Magnificent Mile, the Chicago icon. But I felt uneasy.
Right.
I really did. I felt I was on a subway car that had stalled between stations. And you know how much fun that is.
Yeah.
People waiting for that little bell to go and get the thing moving again. But that's a perception.
Yeah.
And it's a real perception. Perception is reality.
So what can we do to what's maybe some simple exercises we can do to catch ourselves in the act of snap judging?
Pick our spots. If we feel really threatened by public transit where we can, take the subway only at certain times of the day. Avoid the big jams. Maybe walk 3 or 4 stations and ride for 2.
Okay.
That is something I often do. Another piece, listen. Engage people before you do close the curtain and dismiss
them. Seems radical, but okay.
Yeah. I'm not speaking about day-to-day street contact. I'm talking about people you may really initially hate in the office or really, really like in the office.
That's even more dangerous, isn't it? You're like, oh, I like this person. Next thing you know, you're on a lunch date with somebody. You know, it's like, and that's an interesting swastika tattoo. You know?
Did not see that coming.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a good point.
There's not just negative snap judgments. There's also positive snap judgment, which I guess can be equally detrimental.
Yeah.
Just ask the victims, one confirmed, many alleged, of Mr. Cosby.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the story.
Shut up, Kyle.
I was thinking, should I even say those two words? Because it's probably been done and done. But those people believed in him.
Right.
Yeah.
they were looking at false personality attributions. They trusted him.
Yeah. Right. Now, does that have anything to do with his status? Would, if you were, I mean, we're just offering opinions here, but was that, is that what you think happened there?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the situational status or situational role, his power, reinforced his credibility and the personality attributions that these people made of him.
So like in Chicago, a rich person passing a homeless person, the rich person might say, hey, why don't you come with me? And the homeless person goes, oh, this person's going to save me. Next thing you know, the rich person could be hunting the homeless person for sport on their own island.
Yeah, incredulity.
I will watch that movie, by the way, just so you know, Kyle.
Okay.
That sounds like a great movie.
I think it's been done,
It's in The Purge. but, anyway, listen, it's several movies. But, you know, in terms of Cosby as well, right? Like he was in a position and then would say to a lot of these young women that he would mentor them. And so when someone is a huge success in their field and is on your TV all the time, and you think, I can trust this person, which is also something interesting, like with social media, which is the new branch of it, and then with media in general, like TV and celebrity and stuff like that, we do tend to feel like as people that we know these people that we've literally never met. And that's why we find, you know, and then a story comes out, oh, this person did this. And we go, well, no, that's horrible. He would never do that.
Right.
She would never do that. But in reality, we don't actually know that person. And so often more things come out and then you go, oh, no, that's, you know, and so we also have to examine a lot of the times, why are we defending people that we don't know sometimes, you know, and what's, where is kind of celebrity doing a little mind meld on us, you know, and kind of confusing how we feel about an issue.
You recall fake resume problem. People could fake their resumes, imposters basically, and get into high paying jobs without any qualifications. You hear of people becoming surgeons and conducting surgery, flying airplanes. Mm. They have that ability to put themselves in that situation of trust.
Yeah.
Just because of the strength of their personalities.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And media, celebrity goes there as well.
Mm.
And Bill Cosby is a classic example of the power of persona.
Mm. Yeah.
Gone and wrong.
And there's, I mean, tons of examples. He's just the one that is still in the news and happening today. And it's, yeah, it's interesting, right? That your snap judgment can also sometimes be, this person's great.
Yeah. What about snap judgment on yourself? What about judging yourself? Like, I do that all the time.
All the time.
I don't even go into the reason. If something fails, I'm the first. It's because you're a loser. You know what I mean? There's no reason for it. Loser.
You've heard of the imposter syndrome?
Yes.
No, please.
Tell Kyle.
I have worked with people who are highly qualified and successful. They believe that they are frauds. Mm-hmm. They believe their BS content is what gets them the work, not their BSc or Bachelor of Science.
Mm. Right.
And it's really debilitating. We all feel that to a certain degree. If we have any emotional intelligence and any sense of empathy for others, we're assessing our efforts against the efforts of others. Are we trying hard enough?
Right.
Why can't I be John Tavares of the Toronto Maple Leafs? I loved hockey when I was a kid. Why failed? Why am I not on the ice with him?
Right.
And you can just drive yourself really into a bit state.
Yeah.
The first couple of years I was here, I totally had imposter syndrome the first couple of years, like till yesterday. Right. Yesterday I was like, I'm not bad.
Yeah,
at
you
this.
Got over it yesterday. I feel like yesterday was a good one.
But it was very difficult. And I, after struggling for so long, and the year, you know, the couple of years before I started here were very, very trying. And I was working lots of jobs and I was so poor and life was hard. And I remember I not only, you know, when I would go to see my therapist, there were two things that I would talk about. One was the imposter syndrome of like, I have no qualifications and I'm at this place every day. And yeah, I feel like I tricked people. The other thing was, for the first time in so long, I had a job I loved and things were okay. And I did not know how to handle that.
You couldn't say, yes, I'll take success.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know how
I'll
to be happy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it took me a while to go like, how do you be happy when everything's okay?
I mean, good on you for still being here, because when you get into those dark waters, you program yourself to fail. And you feel really badly, but it's what you want, because you want to show.
You're safe. It's comfortable. You know it. And you recognize it.
And you're fessing up.
Yeah.
And you're being real. And you're saying to those people, I told you. I mean, you trusted me, but I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah. Mm. And I don't want to brag. My life had been so garbage so much in my life that I was like, I can't do that. And that's, guys, therapy. It's the best. But it, yeah, because it was one of those things where I'm like, why am I struggling with being okay? That's the goal. But it is very hard. And when you have that feeling of like, I don't belong here and things are good, but I don't know what that is like. Because I honestly, to be honest with you, life hadn't been good for like 15 years or more. So I was like, oh no, oh no. I have to go to therapy now because my life's too good. I don't understand what's happening. Because you're right. There, part of me didn't feel like I deserved it, I think.
Yeah. You want to sort of return it.
Yeah.
Those shoes are way too nice.
Yeah.
Now, here's another one about judgments. What about judges? How do they navigate around not judging people?
They get all the evidence.
You're right. It's not a snap judgment. I guess you'd be a pretty bad judge if you're like, face tattoo, guilty.
Yeah. Right. If they just did opening arguments and you're like, I decided he did it.
I've heard enough.
Yep. But we still have defense. No,
yeah, whatever,
get out.
Brown shirt. Get out of here with your dumb tie.
You know, that's such a good point, because, you know, we often see judges as very patient, learned, proven, intellectual people. But they're working constantly against that primitive brain.
Right.
When someone's brought in front of them, they look at them and they hear what they're accused of. And it's very hard not to judge prematurely based on situational situations, you know? So it's a very, very hard job.
I would imagine.
And I know several, and they take it very personally. I'm not speaking for everyone on the bench, but they really feel their work. They just don't take it home. They feel it all the time.
Right.
Right.
That's a heavy load, I guess. Yeah.
Yes, it is, because there's so much riding on their ability to find the truth.
Right.
And here many of us are living in a very competitive society. We're watching our backs. We're taking care of our jobs. We're not wanting to be, you know, fired or shown up. So we're always looking for that person who may take us down, as opposed to the person who will help us rise up. And in my experience, most people want the best for others. Mm.
Right.
Most.
Right. Right.
Important.
Depending on the world you live in.
Yep.
And how you spend your days.
Right. We have to take a break. When we come back, it's already time to wrap up the day. We've had a super excellent day here on The Breakdown, but we're also going to find out what else Evan Thompson is up to. Of course, you should go to evanthompsonandassociates.com. We will be right back on The Breakdown, Channel 167, Canada Talks. Kyle and I are joined by Evan Thompson, who is a communications expert. Evan, what does that mean? What do you do?
What do I do in the daylight hours? I work with people at varying stages of their professional and personal lives in helping them to become concise communicators. I help them in their jobs, in their businesses, to bring in more clients, essentially to build trust. And I've been doing this for 30 years. And what's becoming very clear to me is people love stories. So a lot of the work I do involves speaking before groups, telling stories that relate to the audience. It's not stand up, it's not motivational, it's really somewhere in between. I realize that I really love talking, in case you hadn't noticed. I do, I love conversation. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a conversation with a large group of people, different walks of life, different interests, and not get paid for it? So I discovered Mo Mondays. And Mo Mondays is an entity. It's been running for about 5 years. It's pretty well across Canada. And you contact them with a story. And they, Michelle Naray, who is the originator and the mastermind, he will invite you to come with four or five other speakers, professional as well as amateur, tends more to amateur, to share 10-minute stories in bars, pubs, across the GTA. I've been doing it now for about 6 years. Did my sixth the other night. And it really ties in with everything we've been talking about today, the trust, which is what I'm all about, and how you feel in a room, how you feel with a group of people who you trust instantly because they're all there for the same reason, to exchange and listen. And it's a wonderful experience. And I would really recommend to anyone who has a story to tell, who may have told many stories in the past or is new to it, stress-free, very professional. You're not coached, but you're given a lot of guidance before you go on. And it's helped me in my business, to be quite frank, because I've become more concise and more articulate. You have to be when you're in a room of 50 to 150 people.
And people can go to momondays.com.
momondaystoronto.com.
Oh, okay.
Or momondays.com and get in touch with Michelle Naray and have the conversation.
This is, again, so interesting. Last night, I was at an event called Spoken Lives. And it's a woman's group, but essentially it's the same thing. And someone I knew was speaking at it and invited me to go, and I'd never been to anything like it. And it was such a lovely experience. And I was just saying to people, there's probably something in wherever you live, an event like this, and it would be great if you can find it. And then here you are with an event. I love it.
And the beauty of this for people like me, communications people, is that I learn there are so many different stories out there. I tend to work with certain groups more than others sometimes, sometimes not. But it just broadens the horizon.
Right.
And it's an extraordinary experience, and it's really, really fun.
That's awesome. Well, I love it. And that was a really good, concise explanation of what you do, too. Yep. Look at you, professional.
Well, thank you for asking. I don't do a lot of self-promotion, but...
No, and you come on here once a month. And we sort of allude to bits and pieces of what you do.
But it's never really fully revealed. Well, we sort of dance around it.
We dance around it. We give the website. We're like, do your own research, listeners. But let's just straight up tell them. We do actually, speaking of telling the listeners things, we do have to tell you that Thursday and Friday, Kyle and I will be on location at JFL 42. And because we're doing some live stuff on this channel as well as on Canada Laughs, the show will actually only be from 2 until 4 will be the live show. 4 to 5 will be best of, because...
It's just going to be more me.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of Kyle, guys. But we are the setup on location. Todd Shapiro will be coming in at 4 to do his show on Canada Laughs from 4 till 6. So normally I do not encourage people to switch channels. I say leave it locked on 167 for your entire life. In this case, at 4, if you want to hear more live from JFL, I will allow a switch to Todd's show on channel 168.
This one time.
Just Thursday and Friday. That's it, though. Other times, you have to keep it locked
in,
with me.
In World War II, before the invasion of Normandy, they gave the soldiers ice cream because they figured this is a one-time deal. These guys might die. This is what you're doing to the listener. You're giving them
a bowl
of ice cream. It is true. Yeah, they gave them ice cream.
I mean,
before they invaded.
It's
which
nice.
Wasn't a great idea either, because it was horrible ice cream, I'm sure. And
no, but
not easy on the stomach as you're invading Normandy.
But see how Kyle makes it sad sometimes?
I wasn't. I thought it was a great analogy. You're giving the audience their last dessert. You're giving them a chance to have one little meal before they are.
Yeah. Keep the analogy
before
going.
Before they die.
Evan is so scared for
and
you
are
right
reborn
now.
Reborn. As Allison Dorr
listeners. Evan's like, I don't know where he's going. He needs so much work from me.
Yeah, no, it's not even worth repair.
Yeah.
This is like walking by a mall that had been flooded and hit by a tornado. Why? Just make it a parking lot.
Yeah. Good call. The point is, we're going to have a lot of fun, though.
Yes.
Thursday and Friday, live from JFL 42. A lot of great comedians are coming by. I'm very, very excited to talk to some of the people that are coming by. And then, you know, we're, of course, tomorrow night is the SiriusXM Top Comic Competition.
Mm-hmm.
So tomorrow night from 6:30 until 7, if you head on over to channel 168, I will be hosting the pre-show where I am backstage with the contestants, you know, saying I'm on the channel where I can do swears.
Yeah,
I always forget, but maybe this is the year I remember to swear. And also, you know, being like, guys, you're so nervous. Talk to me right now.
Right. Yeah.
Share your
their
feelings.
Heads. Really get in their kitchen right before they go perform in a contest.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't that sound lovely?
Wow. You don't want to confuse the venues and pretend you're there now.
No, that's true.
With the cussing.
No, I never.
No cussing here.
You don't need it.
It's been quite a long time since I accidentally swore.
I often wondered. I guess it's a no cuss policy, isn't it? I've
on this
never
channel,
been there.
We're on a clean channel, so this is a. But the comedy channel, you can't have comedy without swear words. That's ridiculous. So the comedy channel lax language on it. From 6:30 to 7 tomorrow night on channel 168, I'll be hosting the pre-show, and then from 7 on, it's the live airing of the Top Comic Competition. So you can hear all of the comics do their set. Maria Bamford is headlining that show.
That's
she
great.
Is my favorite comedian of all time,
it's
after
fun,
Kyle.
Yeah. Thank you.
And
it's implied, though, so you don't
right?
have to do
okay.
that.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yep.
And so that'll be great. Hopefully I'll get to talk to her in the pre-show as well. And then you'll find out who wins. And it's a big prize. $25,000. Shows at JFL in Montreal next year. JFL Northwest in Vancouver, and this year they have added shows at JFL Sydney in Australia.
Wow.
It's a big old prize pack. Evan Thompson, so lovely to see you as always.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here as always.
And, you know, we'll see you in October.
Yeah, might not be me.
In costume or no? I guess it's a little early to plan it out to that degree.
It depends. Yeah, we'll see. So, I'm not saying for sure no.
Okay, well, stranger things have happened.
And again, you can go to EvanThompsonAndAssociates.com or follow him on Twitter at C-Suite Prospects.